that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. On today's show, our visual art expert Dolores Mitchell will be touring a new gallery in downtown Chico. It's a temporary venue, or a pop-up as they call it, created by MONCA, the Museum of Northern California Art. This gallery lets you experience art from the perspective of many different kinds of people, including an accomplished artist who, even after he went blind, still created art. As MONCA representative Jennifer Hornaday explains, you'll even get a chance to create art the same way he did.
It's fun, and some people say, oh, I didn't do very well, and we encourage them and say, hey, give yourself a break. You're drawing without any sight.
A new production just opened at the Blue Room Theater in Chico. The Tony-winning play, The Elephant Man, based on the life of John Merrick, a horribly deformed man who lived in the 19th century, and in spite of his monstrous body, found ways to express his sensitive, perceptive soul. We'll be talking with the director and two of the actors, including Nick Anderson, who plays John Merrick.
I would say that the broken body is something that people see, but the shining spirit is something that people feel.
That's coming up right now on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned.
Dolores Mitchell, and I'm very excited to be talking to Jennifer Hornaday today, who is a volunteer at MONCA's latest pop-up at 215 on Main Street, one door down from Pluto's. Jennifer, tell us a little bit about MONCA.
Okay, MONCA stands for the Museum of Northern California Art. We are going to be occupying the Veterans Memorial Building on the Esplanade. We hope to be in there by this time next year, but we have some ADA requirements to meet first.
Well, right now, you're still open. You've popped up on Main Street.
It pops up, and we're here only for the month of October. We have two more weeks, this week and next week. We've had pretty good attendance so far, but there's always room for more.
MONCA is very involved with outreach to the community and with education. So what types of educational experiences are in this particular pop-up?
In here we have members of the ARC community demonstrating their art on Wednesday mornings starting at 10 o'clock, and they're here until noontime. And they've left their work that they are working on the tables for anyone who comes in to see.
I wonder if everyone knows about ARC.
They provide services to mentally and physically challenged persons of all ages.
Well, the wonderful thing about this exhibit is that it proves that anyone, absolutely anyone, loves to make art and can make art.
That's true, and it's not just the mentally and the physically handicapped. We have a section that introduces the general public to autism, not autism, but how an autistic person responds to sight, sound, color.
Well, I walked into that room, and actually seemed like a really nice place to be. There were these colored, bubbly cylinders that cast reflections on the wall in beautiful patterns. There was it looked almost like a waterbed, but it vibrated. There's a drum.
A very large drum. It looks like a large rectangular box. When you sit on it, you can hit behind your legs, you can hit with your hands, and it's a drum. and it has a very beautiful, deep sound.
Well, the point of this is to give some sense of how an autistic person might experience the world with very heightened sensitivities to sound and touch.
It's interesting to see how they respond. There will be a panel next week on Thursday, a resource panel. People will be talking about resources for autistic people, people with mental and physical handicaps.
Well, Jennifer, you have very personal experience to share with people. Your husband, Richard Hornaday, a very noted artist, he just has been a great influence on so many of his students. But then he began to go blind.
Yes, he lost the sight in one eye and back in 89, I think it was. But then he was able to continue painting a lot all through the 90s. Then he began having difficulty with the, quote, good eye, and went totally blind in 2007. But he continued to paint. Painting was his passion, his love. I think if he had not had that, he would not have lived so long.
Well, Jennifer, I'm looking at one of Richard's gorgeous still life paintings from 1992. He was very interested in the golden mean, that sense of proportion that the Greeks practiced so beautifully in their temples. And he has arranged, what would you call it?
There are flower pots, cups and saucers, a small tray on a table that's covered by a cloth with circles, kind of like polka dots, but they're all the same size.
Well, it's an amazing virtuoso work of showing these circles gradually becoming more and more distorted as the tablecloth folds. So he was a meticulous draftsman. Well, let's see what happened next. Now we're looking at a work called Fly Sheet of 2003.
And in this one, Richard still had partial sight. There were some things he could not do for himself, however, and that was draw straight lines. So he had me mark the sheet off. This is about 16 by 20. He had me mark it off into six rectangles over six rectangles. Then he proceeded to draw in flies of all shapes and sizes and colors, and then paint in the backgrounds. He had enough sight so he could see to do that without my help.
Each one of these flies has a different personality, and some are dancers, and some are spinners, and some are flirts. Okay, let's go on to when Richard completely lost his vision. He invented quite a system to be able to find his paints and to be able to understand where he was putting the brush down on the page.
He devised these little systems for himself. At one point, we discovered he was painting off the paper onto the table and all over the place. So he asked me to make what we call a working mat to attach to the watercolor block. And then he would put on it little bits of masking tape or tape down pieces of cardboard or rulers or whatever to mark the space off for himself so that he knew where he was within the image area.
Well, now that you're saying that, I'm thinking about his use of the golden section when he did have sight and how important spacing and measurement was to him.
All of those things were important to him, and I think he still used those techniques, even though he couldn't see. There were a couple of times where he would call me and have me help him with his ruler or his compass. No, he had something else, some other divider that helped him mark the space off for those golden mean squares and rectangles. And once in a while, he'd call me because he couldn't do it himself. He'd cry out, and I'd come and help him. I only helped him on his request, and I never did the work for him.
Here we are at the table where there are glasses that will cut out a person's vision, and there are marking pens.
Right, and there are pieces of paper on the table, each one with a mat over it, to give you a semblance of how Richard worked. And quite a few people have done this and enjoyed it, and we give them the opportunity of taking the work with them or posting it on the wall.
Well, there must be about 25 to 30 drawings on the wall, and what I'm really struck by is how whimsical they are, how playful.
It's fun, and some people say, oh, I didn't do very well, and we encourage them and say, hey, give yourself a break. You're drawing without any sight, and you're not experienced either.
When is this pop-up going to be open?
This week through Saturday and next week, Wednesday through Saturday. That's all the time we are here. Wednesday hours are 9:30 to 6. Thursday, Friday, Saturday are noon till 6.
Well, the very last panel is going to be October 29th at 7 p.m. And doors close entirely for this pop-up on what date?
On Saturday, October 31, probably at 5 o'clock or shortly thereafter.
Well, thank you so much, Jennifer.
I'm here at the Blue Room Theater in Chico, and I'm going to be talking with the director and a couple of the actors from their present production, The Elephant Man. We'll start with Martin Chavera, who is the director. Hi, Martin. Just tell us a little bit what this play is about. I know it's about John Merrick, who was an actual person.
John Merrick was born in the Victorian era. He was what you would we now call a freak of nature. He was born hideously disfigured. He had a pretty good life as a circus freak. Back in those days, they actually made quite a bit of money. But there came a point in his life when he was abandoned and saved by Dr. Treves, who was a doctor at one of the biggest hospitals in London. And from there, he went on to achieve notoriety through his wit and charm, and had members of royalty, you know, celebrities come and visit him and want to spend time with him.
This rendering of that story goes a lot farther than just telling a story about a freak. It kind of gets into all kinds of philosophical, existential things.
And that's one of the things that got me to really enjoy the script, is in that during the Victorian era, there were these norms, there were these rules that they carried themselves by. And as you examine those rules and those norms, you find that they are very hypocritical.
Well, of course, this story is set in the late Victorian era, but I want to talk about your approach to this. I've seen this play several times, but your approach was quite a bit different. In fact, it starts not even in the Victorian era. It starts in an English pub nowadays. How did you come up with that idea to do the show?
When I first read the script, one of the main conventions it asks for is that the actor who plays John Merrick, the Elephant Man, not wear any makeup, and that he physically just transform into the Elephant Man, you know, just by contorting himself. And I just got to thinking, why should he be the only character to transform? Why shouldn't all the other characters transform? If you're going to open it up to that convention, then I think all the rest of the actors should also be in on the transformation. And we take it back to the word play. You know, you're coming to watch a play, but it's also playing. Almost like you see a bunch of kids, you know, they're playing Star Wars, and they'll pick up sticks and say, "This is a lightsaber." They convince themselves and they convince everyone around them these objects have also transformed, so that their props also go through that process of transformation.
How do you think doing the play this way invests the audience in the play in a deeper way?
It makes you pay closer attention. It makes you focus more on the things that I believe are more important, you know, the actors and their commitment to their characters and a drive to push the story from beginning to end. I just decided, well, let's get rid of those costumes so that people aren't, you know, just saying like, wow, wonderful Victorian costumes, and actually focus on the story.
How did you decide on making the contemporary world out of which this story rises? How did you decide to make that an English pub, a contemporary English pub?
We thought about a bus station, an airport. We even thought about like a homeless encampment. We played with those ideas for a while, and then we just kind of just settled on, let's have it in an English pub.
I'm here with one of the lead actors from the play, Caleb Maines. He's playing Dr. Treves. Tell me about your character.
Well, he's a successful young surgeon. He's had a lot of success, and now he's taking a position in London, which is a difficult place to be. I consider him kind of a guy who might be kind of bookish, but he gets quite an education throughout the course of the play, becomes more aware of some of the harsh realities around him, and that really undermines his certainty.
You start, it seems to me, with very set ideas about right and wrong and morality that come directly from the Victorian era. But by the end of the play, you're not sure of things. Being around John Merrick transforms you in a way. Talk about that.
Yeah, I see the Doctor as someone who's been toeing the line, following the rules, and he's succeeded in doing that. And yet, when he takes John Merrick in, he starts to question things because he sees this grotesque creature who's also at the same time graceful. And his journey is recognizing the intelligence and the depth of the Elephant Man. And then he also begins to question his own motives for wanting to reform him and make him fit in. Merrick makes him question his own way of doing things.
Do you think audiences will go through a journey with your character, you know, starting by thinking of the Elephant Man as a kind of a sensational story, and then end up questioning themselves and their values in the same way you do?
Well, yeah, the Elephant Man is the title character. He's a very dynamic character, but in a way you could call the play the education of Dr. Treves, in a sense, because he definitely goes through a journey, and the audience gets to go with him and see him unravel, see him question his own sort of values and willingness to abide by these social norms. That's kind of the journey I see the audience going through.
Well, now I have the Elephant Man himself, John Merrick. This is Nick Anderson. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
This is a very demanding part, both physically and I'd say emotionally. Tell me about what it takes out of you to contort the way you have to represent this deformed person, but also represent that beautiful soul inside that distorted body.
In a way, it's kind of almost identical to myself. Like, it's very personal because it is so similar to the way that I feel about myself in real life. And it's hard physically because of the stretching around, you know, and the contortions and stuff, especially with the jaw. But I find it comes easy because, not easy, but it comes because I know what that feels like, to be kind of a fish out of water. It feels, you know, it feels almost natural at this point.
You've been in a lot of plays around the Chico area. How is doing this play different from anything else that you've been in?
I would say that it's different in the fact that I've probably invested a lot more emotion in this than I have done in past productions. Usually when you do a show, you know, you get into it, you find your character, and you build on that. But when you find out that the character is you, you know, and like it all is, it's true, you know, everything, the existential stuff that's going on in this play, it really, I mean, anybody who actually contemplates their own existence, thinks about themselves and thinks about others on a higher level, it would really kind of come back to haunt them in a way, because it's life.
Tell me how your character John Merrick is trapped inside his body, and yet what's it like to see things more clearly than anybody else in the whole society sees them?
I've always felt that way, almost, you know, not necessarily more clearly, but at least from my perspective, you know, I see things a little differently. I would say that the broken body is something that people see, but the shining spirit is something that people feel. There's a big difference between what you lay your eyes on and what you can't put your finger on about somebody.
The Elephant Man continues at the Blue Room Theater through November 7th. It plays Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturday nights. And the Blue Room Theater is located on First Street between Main and Broadway in Chico.